You've entered Bookstorm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back to Bookstorm Podcast. Book lovers literally all over the world. What's our favorite count, Kristen, is what it is now. We are up to 76 countries, loyal listeners, 50 states, 1,500 cities, and it's because of fantastic authors like we have here with us today, Michelle Gable, with a wonderful book that you're going to love called The Beautiful People. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're very excited to talk to you about this book. Our listeners are going to love it. And before we get started, let me tell them a little bit about you, because you got a really cool bio here. You have a lot of followers, but maybe sometimes there's something they might not know. So as you all probably know, Michelle Gable is a New York Times bestselling author of several novels, including the one we're here to talk to her about today, which we predict is going to be another bestseller. She grew up in San Diego, and she was the kind of kid, and I love this because I can relate, Kristen too, who checked out a dozen library books at a time, only to return a week later to check out a dozen more. Yep. In fourth grade, her parents gave her a book called Someday You'll Write, and a new passion was born. According to some of her lifelong friends, Michelle tried to turn every playdate and slumber party into a writing group. You were well before your time there.
I don't know that they appreciated it, but it was fun for me.
I'm sure they all learned something. After graduating high school, she attended the College of William and Mary, which is one of our family favorites. She majored in, guess what, drum roll, accounting, of course.
Yes.
As all would-be writers do. And she pursued a career in finance and investor relations. Through it all, she wrote. She wrote at 5 o'clock in the morning. She wrote at 11 at night. She wrote while sitting behind softball dugouts or in her car, because Michelle Gable was meant to be a writer. And we're so very glad that you are, Michelle. She lives in San Diego with her husband, two daughters, two chindos rescued from the dog meat trade. And I just want to quote one of our other favorite authors, who is a friend of Bookstorm Podcast. She's been on our show. We love her. Fiona Davis says, "This book is filled with crisp dialogue and populated with delightful, intriguing characters. The novel sings with wit and wisdom." Yes, Fiona, Kristen and I could not agree more. So happy to have you here and can't wait to dive down.
Thank you so much. And I love Fiona too. She is an awesome writer and person.
Oh, agreed. Well, we are here to talk about The Beautiful People. And one of the things I loved about this story is that you are truly transported to a different time and a different place right from the outset. And I want to kind of give our readers just a little bit of a glimpse of that world. We are in the glamorous 1960s in Palm Beach, and it was a different place back then, but we feel it. We are with the jet set, and it is one of those stories that you are immersed, and I just adored that about this story. Now, in your story, we meet a failed debutante who is thinking she was on one track for getting married and going in one situation, but soon finds herself having to support herself. And she finds a job as an assistant to a society photographer. His name is Slim Aarons. And Slim Aarons is a real figure and a very famous photographer. he takes her into this Palm Beach inner circle, and she even begins a friendship with Lily Pulitzer and some of her very famous friends. And we kind of get to, you know, cavort with them in West Palm and kind of look at what Slim Aarons, at least, would maybe want us to see about the jet set in the 1960s. Did you want to add anything as far as a background to set that up? Because I know there's so much we can't give away.
I know. I think that sets it well. It's just a very specific time and place, you know, the heyday, kind of before the counterculture comes and everyone's suddenly you can jet anywhere easily. And it was just, and in Palm Beach, you know, it's all these fabulous people with a lot of money, you know, beautiful, the beautiful people. And then Slim Aarons was determined to capture it all. His motto was photographing attractive people, doing attractive things in attractive places. That was his goal. So.
And I love it. And Margot, who is learning, she is observing, and we just see this character arc go from a wide-eyed, very naive young woman to, you know, somebody who's seen the world change right in front of her. And I thought that was another really cool aspect of the story.
Yeah, it was fun to write Margot because she's very different than myself because she's so naive and insecure and nervous. So it was fun to take her on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll dive in. Chris, you want to kick us off?
You know, I just really love this time period because it was the era of my parents and grandparents. Mm-hmm. Now, I was born in the 60s, so I had a little feel of this growing up. But I love when an author finds some historical truth and weaves it into a novel. What just really shocked me was this wasn't really that long ago. Women had very few career choices. Their one and only goal was finding a husband. Our beloved character Margot, or Gogo, was not even allowed to date unless her employer Slim allowed her to. This blew my mind. She wanted more of a career, but she had to wait for Slim to decide if she was ready. Okay, I'm going to do this quote now because I love it. We've come a long way, baby. Thank goodness for that. Thank you for reminding us about that, though. What do you think, as the writer, that we could learn even today, here and now, from Margot's struggles and her triumphs, when we think the people of history are so much different from us, it's always shocking to me to see that in some ways we're still a lot the same.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start out in their career, and especially women, because we tend to be less, you know, unfortunately, sure of ourselves as a whole sometimes. And I think there's a lot to learn because, you know, a lot of people start out in their career kind of nervous and I don't know what I'm doing, as Margot is, but she's able to sort of figure it out as she goes. And she has much fewer tools than people have nowadays, right? She doesn't have anyone to consult. She can't Google something, and she couldn't even get her own checking account. She had to have Slim co-sign with her. Like, at that time, women couldn't even get their own checking account. So in that way, I think there's a lot to learn that you can, you know, she could be an inspiring character because she does make all this progress despite having much more obstacles that we don't even have nowadays. So I think a lot of people can relate to that. Insecure, you don't know what you're doing. You got to just fake it till you make it. I have my daughters are 20 and almost 18, and my 20-year-old, you know, she'll get nervous about something, like, you know, being an officer in a sorority or taking a new job. And I'm like, look, everybody has to start somewhere, you know, just kind of, it's okay to feel like you're out of your depth, but, you know, just keep swimming. You'll catch up. So I think there's a lot to learn from Margot in that regard.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing it to our attention. You know, I also thought back then women were either nurses or teachers or secretaries. Like, that was the only thing you had to choose from. And I just think it's important for women today to remember that that was not that long ago, because we have fought very hard to have a voice, not only in the business world, but in the legal world, Kristen will attest, mm-hmm. and the medical world. And we got to hold on to that and celebrate it. Thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, my mom graduated from college in the 60s, and she was a teacher. And she's like, you know, I wish I had more options. She's like, I would have liked to do accounting or this or that. But it was like you said, teacher, nurse, you know, those were your options.
You know, most of Margot and Slim Aaron's subjects were the ultra wealthy or even some celebrities. And Slim was hired to take their photographs at parties, sometimes catching them relaxing in very iconic locations like maybe Acapulco or, of course, Palm Beach. Was Slim capturing an image of these celebrities that they wanted to see? Or do you think that this was an image that perhaps he and maybe us wanted to see? And I'm wondering if that was maybe even a respite from a troubled world, maybe.
I think it's a little bit, so he definitely wanted to photograph them as they saw themselves. So that's why a lot of these people saw themselves as so fabulous. And, you know, there's a famous picture that he took of Truman Capote, and he has just all these like bizarre knickknacks in the background, you know, very creative, very out there. Or then there's somebody in a fur coat or, you know, lounging on a ski slope with a cocktail in their hand. So it was how they wanted to see themselves. But he also was trying to, you know, portray and make it very, he wanted people to want that for themselves as well. And he started as a war photographer. And he, you know, decided, I am done photographing horrible things. I'm only doing the attractive people and attractive places doing attractive things. So he wanted just to celebrate this world. And it was interesting because over time, as that kind of went out of favor in the 70s, he went out of favor. And then he got resurrected back when that came back around to people wanting this fabulous life in the 80s and 90s, then his career came back. So it's interesting. He was so dedicated to that, even when there was a backlash.
Yeah, he was tapping into that nostalgia. And he didn't even realize it. Exactly. And, you know, that's too, I think, another really great aspect of this story, because you really delved into his character arc and some of the, you know, the demons and the difficult things that he saw and all the lengths he went through to, you know, prevent that from being a part of his everyday life. It was almost something he needed to do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He needed to do it.
And what else I loved about this photographer is I did a little homework on the side. I was telling Michelle before we started the show, and I looked up photos of Wendy Vanderbilt, Lily Pulitzer, and they're straight perfectly described out of your book. So these are real photos that are described in here. And it was so intriguing to me to see these people back then in the 60s. And that leads me to my next question, because I got to talk about Lily Pulitzer, because I am a fan of Lily Pulitzer. I moved down to Charlotte and I have a Southern friend here who tells me whenever it's the big sale and I've got Lily Pulitzer and it's comfy. Let me tell you, it's comfy. Yeah. It really is. It's stretchy and she's come a long way. But in the book, Rita calls Lily effervescent. People were drawn to her. Although she may have had high society, let's call it snobbery, privilege, sometimes this irked the reader, but we could not help but admire her confidence and maybe be a little proud of this woman who created a hugely successful brand. And I loved what you taught us about her. She started selling fresh juice to fruit baskets, to shift dresses. And I don't care, I'm giving a spoiler here. Those shift dresses were sewn and created to be made with no underwear. How about that for a shocker?
That's why they're lined, fully lined. Yep.
All you conservative Lily fans, we got to start wearing these dresses differently. But I have to ask you. So I felt like Lily Pulitzer empowered women of her generation. Maybe she still does today. But was this her intention? Or was she more just a very wealthy woman trying to stay occupied, to do something separate from her husband? Was she bored? Was she just trying to entertain herself? Or was there a bigger goal, do you think, after your research?
I think starting out, she was just trying to entertain herself and, you know, fill a hole, because she got married, had kids very quickly, and then she kind of looked around. And this is very common, I think, back then, today, you know, okay, wait, is this all there is? You know, is this the rest of my life? And she was very young when she had children. So she's in her 20s and she's thinking, oh my gosh. And so she started as a hobby, but I think as it grew and she realized, like, okay, I have something here. And then I think from then on, the impression I get is she kind of downplayed it, like, oh my gosh, I am this huge success. But it was a little more once she came up with the idea for the shift dress and it became so popular. And I think then at that point she kind of acted like, oh, who knew I was such a, mogul. But I think by then she was like, okay, she was ambitious in her own right, not just let me live off my parents' money. And I think she also, her Peter, her husband, had some ups and downs in business. And he was a little more of a black sheep, even though he was wealthy too, because he's Pulitzer, it's from, the publishing family. I think she liked being like more successful, quote unquote, than he was. And, something she did on her own too. I mean, it was his oranges, I guess, but I think she liked that. And I think she liked being this mogul. But she would downplay and be like, oh, I just stumbled into it. But she's definitely shrewder than that. Because she, I think she saw, okay, let's do the baskets. But then she's like, ooh, I can also sell the bruised fruit as juice. Let me do that. Like, I think she was innovative.
She was pretty smart, I think.
Oh, very smart. Yeah.
And I have to put a teaser for our readers because I love that she was friends with Wendy Vanderbilt, but also Jacqueline Kennedy. And you brought
Yes.
them into the book in a very cool way that I don't want to give away, but you sort of let us see these people for who they really are, apart from our famous memory of them, or you could even say infamous memory of them, whatever we may
Right.
have.
Yeah. They were school buddies, her and Jackie.
Michelle, you had mentioned Peter a minute ago. I want to ask you a question about this. Peter Pulitzer and Margot were having a discussion, and they were talking about how everyone is screwed up, especially the Palm Beachers, as they said. And this
Yes.
is a quote from Peter. In other parts of the country, the children are delinquents. In Palm Beach, it's the parents. They're the ones who stay out all night drinking and wrecking cars, the ones mired in sexual misadventures that two times out of three led to a half-hearted attempt at suicide. What is it about Palm Beachers or Palm Beach that brought out this side of people? Was it the isolation, maybe the lack of institutional controls like New York City? What do you think?
I think it is something about that, the isolation and a lot of, for the, a lot of people in their set, they were the first kind of generation removed from the, whatever, the generation that made the wealth. And they were kind of the next generation down. And they weren't really expected necessarily. The ones that were in Palm Beach were not expected to actually do anything. They could just kind of live off of what their family made. And so they would kind of coalesce in Palm Beach because, like, why would, the weather's great. It's beautiful. Why wouldn't you live down there? And so they didn't have a lot of time. They didn't have a lot of stuff to do. Lily did, of course, but, others didn't. And they would get bored and they'd go out and party. And, I think so there was a bit of that. And there weren't the expectations. They make a, one of them makes a comment saying, like, yeah, well, if you're in New York or you're even in Chicago or other cities and someone says, like, what do? You can't just be like, well, I don't do anything. Like, it would be almost shameful, even if your family was very wealthy. But in Palm Beach, it was almost the opposite. Like, it's a area of leisure, and people aren't, in the rat race down there. So it's kind of viewed, as through Slim's lens as the ultimate life. Oh my gosh, wouldn't this be the best life to be Palm Beach doing nothing, sitting on the beach all the time in the sunshine? But they would get into trouble because they would get bored.
Yeah. Well, your story kind of made the reader think about the parallels with today because, are these misadventures or is this wrongful conduct? And you could see where
Right.
that wash of nostalgia, excused away a lot of behavior back in the 60s,
Oh, absolutely.
right? That today we're like, this is a little bit of a
Yeah.
different story. And that's why your book was so interesting because it captivated just a little bit of a period of history where people weren't exactly sure. Maybe how to view certain things.
Right,
Very, very
exactly.
interesting.
One little addition to that, I remember somewhere in the book that someone said that Palm Beach back at that time was a matriarchal society made up a lot of widows. So there was a little bit of an unseen female influence, maybe that wasn't even allowed.
Yeah, I read that in like some books and newspaper articles that came out around that time that were just talking about this widow matriarchy, this influence there. And I thought that was so intriguing and made sense, right? Because they're the the elders of the group, if they're living longer than their husbands, and they did have this influence. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
I like that. We're Kristen and I are big believers in women empowerment. And I like looking back in history and seeing that women found a voice even when they weren't allowed one. Because I'm going to tell you right now, my grandmother bossed my grandfather around. She just did. I remember
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we just
Absolutely.
really loved it. I mean, we've given you a lot of teasers. We can't
I'm
give
so
any
glad.
spoilers. You got to pick it up. The Beautiful People by Michelle Gable. Michelle, it's coming out in April. This is when the podcast will air. But give us a glimpse. What are you working on next?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but it's actually a modern day story, which will be my first. Most of all my books have a dual timeline, modern and historical, but there's no historical piece. And it's about a dysfunctional family, and there's a little bit of a magical realism element. So it's quite a departure, but I'm having so much fun with it.
That sounds fantastic. We can't wait. We're going to pick it up. Listeners, get this book. You're going to love it. In the meantime, you have to connect with Michelle Gable. You can find her at michellegable.com. She's on X and she's on Instagram. And it has been a lot of fun talking to you today, Michelle.
Same with you. Thank you so much.
Kristen, that was an incredible discussion with Michelle Gable. I'm enamored with the life and times in the 60s. It wasn't that long ago, and it just shocks me. And I had to ask you, I got to tell you this. I have to ask your opinion of this. What about that old adage that wealth does not bring happiness? I feel that sort of plays right into this book. The women had a cook, they had a nanny, they had a maid. Peter Pulitzer did not have to work. As I recall, wasn't really quite that successful with business. You would think that this type of person had everything they could possibly imagine. But as you brought up with your second question, they didn't. They were sort of running wild and causing trouble and wreaking havoc. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the most interesting aspects of this book because we saw a lot of people dealing with their anxieties, with depression. They were smoking like fiends. There were a lot of drinking. So we saw a lot of, behaviors where they were trying to, address something that was missing inside of them. And I agree with you. We had this big contradiction between people who have everything, and then we had our view of Margot, who basically had nothing. And she's looking around at this like, what is going on? This didn't even make sense to her. So I loved having those two different angles, but boy, are you right. I closed that book and I was like, whew, there's nostalgia. And then there's, underneath that veneer, a lot of things that were not good and not okay.
And what do you think about this notion? I've heard people say it before. When we talk about the Vanderbilts and the Pulitzers and these famous families, did we set them up in our minds back then almost like royalty? Because, like the British had their king and queen, who did we have to look up to? We talk about the Kennedys a lot like this, that they were the royalty that America never had. Do you think, in part, we pushed them into those idyllic positions that we wanted a fantasy?
Yeah, I think that's why Slim Aarons had a job, right? Because there was a demand and a thirst for these exciting pictures. And in turn, that put pressure. And in turn, we see some bad behavior that the public then feeds upon. And it was like this cycle of something going on. But I also see that today in social media, right? We want people sometimes to behave badly or to make their mistakes because that's fodder for all of these social media sites, which people will then follow for 200,000 people or more. So I agree with you. I thought that was a very interesting underlying theme here. And that is, are we setting them up as royalty for our own entertainment, our own benefit? And if so, is that where some of that emptiness comes from on both sides?
Yeah, that's a good point. And then maybe we set them up, but then a little bit of us starts to become a little irked, a little envious, and we're happy to see not really a fall. I don't want to see people have huge failures in life, but maybe we just like to see, hey, they are human. They are a little bit like us.
Yeah. No, I think that's very true. Very true. And I think Slim was really thinking in terms of how do I smooth that out and just present this beautiful picture so that we're not diving too deep into anything. I want this idyllic life that I'm portraying here. You know, not necessarily from self, but he wanted to see it.
Well, we have the tabloids, we have the periodicals, magazines are huge. We love to get these stories. And you're right, now we have social media at our fingertips. So it's all quite intriguing. One last quick question, because I've got to do this quote from Lily from the book. She says at one point, talking about Peter, without social expectations, they, meaning men, have forgot how to behave. Men lack a woman's intellectual curiosity, so they struggle to find interests other than booze and golf and gambling. It's easy to burn out living like that. Now, let me tell you what, that's a funny line written by Michelle Gable, but it did make me laugh because I loved the insurgence of Lily Pulitzer claiming to be more intelligent than her husband in an era where she was not allowed to be. I sort of like that line.
Yeah, there was a lot of provocative comments and thoughts there. But at the end of the day, right, we had a lot of people making bad choices, both men and women in the story. So it was easy to point the finger at the men, but the women were also making some of these choices. Maybe they were less obvious about
Yes, equal opportunity goes both ways, every way.
it.
So it's been a lot of fun. Listeners, thanks for joining us again. I truly love this book. Check out Michelle Gable. She has pictures of Lily Pulitzer on there on her website, and she keeps finding new photos and posting them. And we've got a great lineup. You've got to stay tuned. Stay with us. Keep logging in. We're going to be interviewing Nick Petrie, Mary Kubica, Dervla McTiernan, Susan Mallory, Lisa Unger, Heather Gudenkauf, Liza Palmer, Christopher Reich, Ashley Elston, Bonnie Jo Campbell, CJ Box, and CJ Ray.
And listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for tapping into our social media. It's because of fantastic authors like the one we had today and your feedback that we are in 76 countries and territories somehow. We love it. We are thankful for you. So we want you to keep tuning in. You can find us at bookstormpodcast.com, on Facebook, on Instagram, on X, on TikTok. And we have our YouTube channel. And there's 100 plus videos, of course, for you to tap into there. We would love for you to listen in and keep telling us who you'd like to hear from next. We love hearing from you. Until next time, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into life-changing fiction.